So much for coming out. You know, like we were saying earlier, Pete has really worked his butt off to put this thing together, and it's been really cool to see everything come together like it has. So thank you guys for coming out here. Pete, you want to talk a little bit about how you put this whole thing together?
Yeah, basically I've been wanting to do this. I used to come to Acme back, I've been coming here for decades, but I used to come when ACP Acme Comics Presents first started. I used to go over there, and they used to have a book club there, but it was kind of like a female book club. And I went to a couple of them just because I always wanted to be a part of a book club, and they were talking about comics. So that's like, yeah, that's awesome. So I didn't do that, and then for years I kind of just thought about it. I kind of like pitched it to Jermaine a couple times, just like, wouldn't it be cool if we had a book club? And it was always like one of those things that it is a lot of work. You know, you got to kind of stay on things, and, you know, it's a lot of work. But I was determined to do it. And then one day Chris Henry came in, one of our customers, and we kind of just fleshed it out, really. Just started talking about it, and it came, you know, got more and more. As weeks went on, it kind of like got bigger and bigger. And then I kind of just decided on Kingdom Come, because it was one of those books that got me back into comics, like right when I started going to college. That's like 98.
I mean, we must have went through, what, like 5 to 10 different books before we settled on Kingdom Come.
I had 4 pages double typed all the way down, just different titles. I still have it too, just in case if you guys want to go that far. Me and Austin sat there for a while trying to decide which book, and I think we just finally decided on Kingdom Come because it's a classic, and it's one of those that, you know, is a big book for just 4 issues. It's like a lot of stuff goes on in there. The art's beautiful, so many characters. It's, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit like about my Kingdom Come history. When I started working here at the shop, we got to talking about Kingdom Come one day, and I had never read it before. And Jermaine was immediately like, you can't come back to work on Monday until you've read this book. And I took it home, and it just blew me away. Like, I couldn't believe I'd missed out on it for so long. Like, you know, Marvel was, you know, I put my stamp on that for so many years. And to, you know, kind of discover that book at a later age was just, it was awesome. It's so good.
Yeah, it just gets me too. It's like the thing I've like another reason that I've picked this book is because of Rebirth, like DC's Rebirth, and it kind of reinvigorated the brand, brought back a lot of the stuff that we missed. And for me, like the biggest thing was legacy. It was always one of those things like Bruce Wayne's Batman, but one day he's not going to be Batman anymore. Who will be? It'll be Dick Grayson, because he was like the first, you know. And then like I always thought about that, and like eventually, you know, always have to pass the torch. And DC was like the best company that did that. They always had like a lineage of family. Flash had like, there's like 19 people in his Flash family at one point, it feels like. And so that was like a huge thing for me. It was when Rebirth came back, you know, Green Arrow got back with Black Canary and all these different things. Wally West came back, and Barry Allen remembered him. So I was like, yeah, really cool legacy stuff. I love this book.
Spoilers.
Yeah, if you guys haven't read Rebirth, no,
so I guess, yeah, we'll just kind of open it up. For those of you that weren't here when Pete first told everybody, he has set up something really special for us tonight. And at about 8:30, we're going to be calling Mark Wade and talking with him. So, yeah.
Yeah,
pretty exciting. Yeah.
Talked to him at Baltimore Comic Con, and I said, you know, we're doing a book club. This could be the first one. If you guys came to Comic Book City Con we had a few years back, he was kind of like the headliner there. And I said, you know, we remember you from that. We'd kind of like you to be the first person on our, you know, podcast, book club podcast thing. And he was like, absolutely, I'm completely for it. So, yeah, it's going to be pretty exciting talking to Mark. And that's like, excuse me, that's about 18 minutes from now. We'll be talking to him. I just kind of like, generally, what did you guys think? Did you like the book?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a few of you out there I see are DC fans, like Ryan. Yeah. And it's like, there's a lot of history in there. Like, when Norman McKay, the preacher, that's like kind of like the guy that does it, he's with the Spectre, kind of the judgment of the book. He's actually talking to like the very first Sandman, DC Sandman. That's who that guy is dying in the hospital bed. And there's little things like that throughout the whole book, the different characters. I grew up with the new Teen Titans, Marv Wolfman and George Perez. So my favorite character in the whole book was Nightstar, which was the daughter of Starfire and Nightwing. And I always thought that was really cool. And I don't think she has any lines in the book. She's just kind of like, you know, has green eyes and black hair. And that's how you know it's her. But the depth in this book, I have so many characters. And like in the background, there's so many people in there that I didn't even notice until Jermaine pointed out to me that in one of the panels, you can see Spider-Man, Captain America, and Iron Man in the background. And I was like, yeah, right. And he showed me. I was like, oh, my God. They snuck him in there. And there's like, you guys just showed me a few minutes ago, Mark Waid was in the book. He's running at one scene. But it was like, it's a lot of stuff like that in that book that it really makes it special for me. And I'm sure a lot of you that it's just like, there's so much stuff in there. There's throughout the book when it's talking about the history and talking about the different, like Batman and Superman, it actually shows Superman lifting up a car, crashing it like the cover of the one book, and Batman holding somebody and swinging like the, you know, Detective 27. So there's a lot of really cool stuff in there like that, hidden little gems. But yeah, gosh, I kind of like to hear from some of you guys what you thought about. Like, who are some of you guys' favorite characters?
I like the inclusion of Shazam because it's funny. My dad wasn't a big comic book guy, but he read Shazam in the 40s and remembers that as like his big childhood comic book hero. And it was always kind of in his mind, I think, opposed. Like, I like Shazam. I didn't like Superman. I like Captain Marvel. So I kind of had a family history of that confrontation.
And I like, too, how they kind of used him as he was the final say in the end. And it was kind of cool, too, because he was, like, the main person that was on both sides of things. As Billy Batson, he was human. As Shazam, he was, like, a god, like Superman. So it's kind of cool that he was the one that kind of chose one way or the other.
Yeah, I was really fascinated by the fact that they were all, you know, Superman's kind of central character and Wonder Woman. But it was kind of interesting. It was really, to me, it seemed like a meditation on, you know, even Superman, who was, like, the most powerful being. In the end, it's not really a superpower that really matters. The superpower only seems to get him deeper and deeper into trouble.
Yeah, like every turn, the gulag, like making the prison for the superhuman, all that stuff. Like he was trying to do right, but it was just like he lost his humanity. Those 10 years that he just kind of left us behind because of what Magog did. And that was a huge thing for me, too. Like Magog, like there's so much, like the biblical stuff in this. I grew up Catholic in New Jersey. When we moved down here, we kind of like downgraded a little bit. Now I'm not as religious as, you know, most would say. Yeah. 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 But that was like just the biblical imagery to me was really cool. And like Magog was the false idol, the golden calf with the golden horns. And it was really cool. I was reading some of this stuff and I listened to like 4 podcasts with, Alex Ross and Mark Waid talking about it. And, one of the cool things they said was they took everything they hated about 90s comic book characters and put it all in Magog. So you'll see Cable in there. Yeah. Like you'll see all these different characters, like the metal arm and the one eye and the pouches on this belt from like, you know, the Deadpool and stuff. But that was like one of the things for me too, was also the Golden Age stuff. They had like the Golden Age stuff. And then the 90s characters were the people that just go around like, I don't care. I'm going to kill them. It'll end it. I won't have any like, you know, no rogues gallery for me guys. That's it. Yeah, it was kind of cool. Like, it was like, that's how the comic industry was in the 90s. People were kind of sick of the Golden Age and pushing the old, you know, righteous characters out and kind of taking the more, you know, the Punisher and the Deadpool and Spawn type characters and kind of like digging them a little bit more.
I'm curious to know how many of you was this the first time reading Kingdom Come? I know, like, if you guys are listening at home, you can't see this, like, hands in the air, but
this, yeah. 6 people.
Yeah, so.
I think that was also timing for me. I mean, the book is 20 years old now, and it's like that's just when I had entered college about, and I think I just stopped buying comics because I didn't have money, and somehow never went back to it, which
yeah.
Glad you made me do it.
Nice.
And it wasn't my first time, but I still got chills on certain pages. Well, especially when Superman first shows up and comes back.
Well, that's like, when I first read it, I saw, I guess it was 98, I was like 19, 20, and now I'm 39. So it's like, you know, after those 20 years, like reading it now, I got so much more out of it just because, like, back then it was like, oh, cool, superheroes. Oh, look, you know, legacy and all that stuff. But, like, reading it now, it's like there's so much to it. And, like, knowing so much about the comic history that I've learned, it really adds to it.
Yeah. I mean, aside from Batman, you know, Kingdom Come was my first exposure to a lot of DC characters. So, it was, you know, it was basically a gateway book into the DC universe for me. So that's something I'll always hold special for sure.
And, like, I always, like, you know, every time I think of the DC, just my head is always the Trinity. Batman, Wonder Woman, and Superman. But, like, I did not realize, but before this book, there was no Trinity. It was World's Finest, Batman, Superman. And then this is, like, Wonder Woman's role in this book is what made the Trinity. Really? That's the thing that made it. It was, well, now it's the quad or whatever, because Harley Quinn is now part of the DC pillars, they say.
So I don't accept that.
Pluto's not a planet.
Yeah.
What else? I got some questions for you guys.
Titan's Age is still surprisingly apropos. There was a scene, I just read it today, where Amara Commando is on top of Statue of Liberty talking about how he's going to, like, expunge all, like, the immigrants and stuff. this could have totally been written today. Just as appropriate.
Yeah. My chill moment is when Wonder Woman gives Superman his glasses and says, mm-hmm. Try these. Instead of being just the skies, it's really part of what makes him who he is. You know, yeah. He's not pretending to be Clark Kent. It's really the part of him. In some ways, that's the best. So that was really, really, really super neat.
Yeah, that's like, I'm sure Mr. Wade will want to talk about this too, but I was reading that when he, like, he always, like, kind of thinks about the ending when he's writing something. And that was the one thing, like, he was, like, the whole time that Alex Ross thought of this, and, like, he kind of, he had the general idea, like, World War III, including superheroes, new superheroes, old superheroes type thing. Yeah, he was saying that, like, he was kind of talking to Alex Ross about, you know, back and forth about the book, and he was really nervous because he didn't think he could, like, he could do it justice, because, like, Mark Waid is that guy that you could ask him, you know, what was Lois Lane's father's middle name? He'll have it like that. He knows that history of DC. When he was talking about to Alex Ross about it, he decided we're going to have to stop. Yeah,
dude, it's fine. Don't. Yeah,
yeah, we'll edit all that.
As formal as, you know, like most of the podcasts that we do or anything. It's, yeah, you know, it's open. It's fine.
Sorry, guys. But yeah, he was saying that when he pictured that ending in the cafe, that's when he was like, oh yeah, I got to do it. I got to do this, because that ending, like with the glasses and them kind of sitting there in a mockery of their old life. And it was like, you know, just kind of like, you know, Green Lantern's lantern. There's Batman's old 1966 suit over there, and a Batarang with a taser on it. And yeah, so it's kind of cool that, like, that's the other thing too, is we were talking about, like, doing this, and I realized, like, I wish we could do some sort of way we could do the Krypton Planet Cafe. Like, that would be so cool, like, having little things over. Yeah, but
I was surprised they never tried to recreate that, like, at a Six Flags or something, when, like, the WB properties were super heavy there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, this is a complete missed opportunity. Like, I'd eat there every day. Yeah.
Plus the line when the waiter goes, I'm Robin, and Bruce Wayne says, sure you are.
Yeah, that Bruce, that's the other thing too, is like when I first read that, I remember how upset I was when I was like, why is Bruce Wayne sitting with Lex Luthor and these guys, like the League for Human, whatever it was. But that was like, yeah, that was crazy that, like, I liked how he did that. He said he was just kind of getting intel and kind of flipped the coin on him.
And, you know, you guys feel free to throw whatever out there, you know.
Still,
any thoughts?
For where you said Captain America and Spider-Man were hidden. Do you know?
Yep,
where?
Jermaine. It's the page where it has Captain. On the other page is Shazam.
Okay.
Like, smiling real big. Yeah, I wish we I should have done that. I should have had it out here with the page number and everything. References.
You got that. Where's that? That one wizard.
It's
book?
Like the last of the third issue. So right when you see, you see your Spider-Man, America.
Can you explain more about Spectre's powers? Like,
Like, what is he in the normal DCU? What does he do?
He's kind of the judgment of God.
Okay.
Like, he goes around and
judges people.
Yeah, he basically goes around and judges people. He's like, "Look, I know you've done these things. This is what's going to happen."
Okay.
And he always has to have like a human to go through.
Okay.
I like the fact that they used him as a narrator. That was at least to start the story off. That was actually a pretty good plot device. Was how they were using the conversation between the Spectre and the preacher, to set off the whole story and set the stage, as it were.
Yeah, and that's I really liked too. How it was like the main guy was like the old human preacher guy that was like very humble guy and like, "Why do you keep doing this to me? I don't understand what's going on." Like, dude, your judgment, you got to decide. Because that was really cool. The way they did that.
Well, for me, what I liked about it was a reminder that Superman is always about the man and not the super, which is why I don't like the current movies very much that when they have him, because they miss that part completely. He's got all these powers, and when he tries to use them, as you said in the story, when I try to make things better with my powers, with my strength, things get worse. And Wonder Woman tells him, it's when you use your head and think like a human or think like a person, you've always done the right thing. That was your power. You never had to think about it. You just did the right thing and people followed.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until he abandoned his powers again and sort of got back to being more human that the situation resolved itself. So he's always been the best of us, but not because he's the strongest or he can fly or shoot laser beams out of his eyes. It's because he's the best of us in terms of his humanity. And he wasn't even born here. That's kind of the fun of it, right?
Yeah.
He came from somewhere else, and yet he's still the best of us.
And that's like the other Elseworld book I love is Red Sun. Mm-hmm. And that kind of just proves that, like, if he landed in somewhere else that wasn't quite as nice as Kansas, USA, mm-hmm. he would have turned out completely different. He would have been a weapon or like anything. God knows.
I'm curious that for those who read it in the past, what were the parts before you opened it up to read it for the book club? What were the parts that you remembered that you liked, you're looking forward to seeing again in print?
The gulag.
Yeah.
That explosion. Yeah, that was pretty cool.
And that was Alex Ross used the Legion of Doom headquarters from the old Super Friends. That's where the gulag was.
That's when they should have known it was a bad idea.
Yeah. And then the UN is the Hall of Justice. Yeah.
Wow, this place looks evil.
That's right. I'm not going to end well.
Why does that prison look like a skull submerged in the ground?
Also, the part where Green Lantern gets shot with the wooden arrow, because Jermaine had made a mention of that to me maybe about a year ago after I'd actually read this, and I actually reading it again, I was like, aha, okay. Yeah, it made more sense the second time around.
I didn't find the Wonder Twins in any big picture, so.
Yeah, what happened to the Wonder Twins?
Well, Marvin's in it.
Marvin's in the bar, yeah. And that's like, there's so like, just like, yeah, Ambush Bug was in the bar. Mm-hmm. There's Alex Ross did some art in Clive Barker's Hellraiser number 17. And that, one of the Cenobites from Hellraiser was actually in the bar. So that was kind of cool too, that he even like did a toss back to this like other work he did in 1998. I thought it was really cool.
I did get that, yeah.
I should have said something very sinister at that moment. The cupcakes were laced.
Well, I like the part when Bruce Wayne taunts Lex Luthor at the end of walking by him in the hospital, and he just says Shazam to him, and Luthor says, "Shut up," you know.
Also, those like white shirts with the red Batman symbol, like, yeah. Where can I get those?
Right.
Like, yeah, every time I see them, I'm like, oh, that's a great shirt.
I just wanted to see more of the senile Riddler, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the other thing. Like, one of the things I want to ask Mark Waid is, like, do they ever plan a sequel? Just because they have so much material there, so many people to work with, that they could do anything. And that's like, after the whole thing with the explosion, they have a limited number of people you could work with instead of the multitude.
Well, look, the flavor of the book and some of the modern era issues, if they just filter it through the world we have today,
yeah,
and just the experiences that day-to-day experiences, just, I would imagine for people that read the book 20 years ago, just filtering it through adult life at least for me, when I read something I read 20, 30 years ago, it changes when you read it. Just even without the world around me, just reading it as an adult or reading it, you know, a 20-year-old, 30-year-old, 40-year-old, it changes.
It's like the book grows with you as you go along. Yeah.
And you get a whole different perspective. So it would be interesting to see if they were to pick the characters back up now after all these years and just, okay, we've had an election right here and other places too, and new political boundaries all over the world in these 20 years.
And that's like another thing, that another reason I kind of picked this book is it feels like this election season.
You heard it here first.
We have a flood.
Put this on pause for a second while everybody's phone goes off.
The Krypton, planet Krypton kind of plays a funny role because it has like this super epic art. It's just like superheroes are bathed in light, and you know, Shazam is like, you know, huge. And then it kind of takes it down and kind of it uses humor to sort of deflate it and kind of almost make the point of the book too, that the image is almost as dangerous. I was really surprised at how that epilogue, how funny it is. And the kind of role that plays in the book.
Well, it is 8:30, so.
All right. Would you guys like to talk to the writer of the book and ask him a couple questions?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm so nervous.
Hello, can you hear me?
Hey, Mark, this is Pete with Acme Comics. How you doing?
Good. You're good. I don't know if you can hear me or not. There's a big delay when you respond.
We can hear you pretty good.
Okay, great. Okay.
The first question we got for you is, how did you come about writing Kingdom Come?
Well, actually, that was Alex Ross. That was Alex after his success with Marvels over at Marvel Comics, coming across the street, and he had a bunch of sketches and ideas for Kingdom Come, a bunch of character sketches, and some rough ideas about what shape the story should be in, but nothing really super concrete. And so they got me together with him because I know everything about the DC Universe, or knew everything at that point about the DC Universe. So I was, you know, very familiar with even the most esoteric characters. And so that's basically, we sat down, we had lunch, and at the end of it, we decided we'd be working together.
Yeah, I think the conversation was someone asked you what Lois Lane's mother and father's names were, and you just spit it out really quick like that.
Sure, Salmonella. Come on, what do they teach you kids? What do they teach you kids in school today? Come on, yeah.
We still read some of the Jimmy Olsen books around here at Acme. one of my personal questions I've always wondered. I've listened to a couple of podcasts and I'd never really heard you answer it. Besides the Trinity, who is your favorite character from the book?
Wow, it's in terms of Kingdom Come, right?
Yeah.
Besides the Trinity, that's a really good question. I think maybe Green Arrow, because I think he's got one of the better lines in the book when he comes in after Superman comes in and gives a big lecture to the young heroes about how they should behave and you know, comes down on them like an angry dad. It's Green Arrow who comes in and says, and now for the Democratic response. And I like that. I like Oliver as he should be, as an anti-authoritarian figure in that world.
Yeah, I think mine was I've always loved, I'm so sorry. Nightfire, I'm sorry. Gosh, I had a little trouble there. The mic.
Whatever her name was. The daughter of Nightwing and Starfire, yeah.
Yeah, I grew up on the new Teen Titans, so that was always my favorite part.
Yeah.
And we got some of our group here has some questions for you.
Sure.
I got a question. I'd like to know, instead of using Hal Jordan as the Green Lantern, what was the thought behind using Alan Scott?
honestly, that was Alex's choice. It was Alex had already designed that character with that look to it, and I think Alex and I both tend to think of the Golden Age characters as a little overlooked. So I really think that's where that came from. It was Alex's previous design, and since he didn't really have much of a role in the story, it kind of didn't matter. Okay. Who else has a question? You in the hat. What about you?
Wow, he's actually wearing a hat. That was really good.
Thank you.
In the cafe scene at the end, Bruce Wayne is mentioning that there were a couple hints as to Wonder Woman's pregnancy, and it's like, oh, there were other things as well. And I'm reading into it. I don't know what you're implying that the other hints are. Was it this bit of gray hair on her, implying that somehow being pregnant is making her...
Oh, I think you're reading into it. I honestly think you're into it. I think that, yeah. I don't think I really meant anything by that. I think that was just the thing, maybe you're reading into that. So
really unusual, you get a cropping of that panel to just be random. I thought maybe there was something implied there I just wasn't getting.
Yeah. Well, you get a bonus question now, because that one doesn't count, because that was just reading.
Have you ever, you and Alex ever thought about doing a sequel to Kingdom Come?
Oh, I mean, we've never really seriously thought about it. We've just gone our own separate ways so vastly over the last 20 years. And he and I had a really nice talk about 3 months ago. We had a store signing up in the Chicago area, and had dinner afterwards. It was nice. It was very pleasant. And again, I think we see again very much eye to eye on who these characters are. But I just, I don't think either of us is eager to go back there, because if for no other reason than sequels almost never turn out to be as good as to be, because you're not only trying to tell a story, you're trying to compete with people's memory of what they enjoyed about the story 20 years ago.
That's true.
How did you feel when you were writing the scene for the nuclear explosion? Just kind of, thoughts on that, because I mean it's a big part of, like, at least the 1980s culture from being in the Cold War and everything. I just thought, what were you drawing upon from in that area?
Well, it's funny that you bring that up, because actually that was Alex's and my biggest point of dispute in the entire thing. You're talking about the one at the end, right? The big nuclear, Alex really wanted the only survivors of that nuclear blast to be Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. He really wanted everybody else to perish in it, because they are the Trinity. They're the beginning and they're the end. And I understand that impulse. I think from a storytelling standpoint, that's not a bad idea, but I just couldn't wrap my head around the idea of Superman failing so dramatically that so many lives would be lost. So that was, I don't think either of us was right or wrong. It's just two different opinions on how that story should end. But in the end, I guess my way came out, the way it was printed, and that's kind of where that was all, that's kind of what that was all about.
Well, I have a question. Throughout the book, there are just a ton of Easter eggs. And so I've always wondered, was that a lot of your influence, like putting the Easter eggs in there? Was it kind of Alex just going through as he was doing the issues, just putting cool things in the background?
It was mostly Alex. The rule of thumb tends to be, and this is not always the case, but the rule of thumb tends to be, if they have a speaking line, somebody I put in the script, and if it's somebody just in the background who doesn't have a speaking line, it's probably Alex just goofing around with his Easter eggs. So with things like Superman super pets in the in the farm in the early scenes, where you see a cat, which farms have cats, and you see a dog, because farms have dogs and horses, and you see a monkey and horses. Farms don't really have monkeys, so that was his nod to the super monkey. So when Alex spends 3 days on every single page, you just kind of let him do what he wants to do.
Is that an accurate estimate, about 3 days per page?
Yeah, that was about it. He was very regulated. He was very, very strong work ethic. He would do 10 pages a month. rain or shine. So the whole project took him 18 months, and you could always count on him doing 10 pages per month, no matter what was going on.
So my question is, of course, we like the iconic battle between Superman and Captain Marvel. I will never call him Shazam. And when he calls down the lightning and speeds out of the way so it strikes Superman, and then seeing that again years later on the Justice League cartoon, how do you feel about being a part of something that resonated so many years later that a whole other generation gets to see that battle in a different way?
That's pretty cool. I gotta say, that's pretty cool. I gotta say, honestly, one of the great joys of the job of what I do, especially when I've been doing it as long as I have, is that is being able to give back to the mythos of the characters a little bit, to be able to give back something that stays and sticks with the characters, whether that's the lightning scene in Kingdom Come that's translated into the animated series, or whether it's every time somebody on TV mentions words T-Force, or whether it's Superman on a big screen pointing at a yes on his chest and saying stands for hope on my world. Like, those are things that I added to the DC universe that make me feel just glowing with pride that somebody else thought enough of them to carry them forth and to like incorporate them into the overall mythos and continuity.
My question is, it says in the notes at the end of the book that your father was the real Norman McKay, which I took as a real tribute to your father. How was he the basis for Norman McKay, who in many ways is sort of the central voice of moral reasoning in the book?
Right. Well, it was actually Alex's dad. Right, okay. So Alex's dad, and Alex's dad was, again, a minister, and he looked exactly like that. And Alex early on asked me, did I want to sit down with his dad and have dinner with him and, talk to him before he started writing the book. And I said, no, I really would rather wait until it's all said and done, because we're creating a fictional character, and I don't want to feel like I have to worry about exactly, gee, would your dad say this? Or your dad say this every time I wrote a line of dialogue? When all was said and done, he actually came to one of our signings and sat with us. I think it was in Chicago one year, or maybe San Diego. And there's pictures of us somewhere. And he was a delightful gentleman, and still is. I don't know really how he received the work. I don't, Alex has said he seemed pleased by it, but it's not like, I don't know. I think he just thinks it's something cute that his son did. I don't think he understands the impact that book seems to have had to a lot of people. So in that way, he's very humble.
Yeah, because really, I think it's a really very flattering presentation. Boy, if my son's here, he made me a character like that in a comic book, that'd be pretty cool.
yeah, exactly.
You might not be able to answer this, but has there ever been any talk with you about maybe doing an animated feature on the Kingdom Come?
Not really. There's been some conversation a few years ago, but the feeling at the time was, the technology was not there to really capture the Alex Ross look, and that's what you really want to do with it. Is it's not just tell the story, but also really make it look like Alex paintings come to life. I think we get closer to that technology every year, and so no one said anything to us. But I wouldn't be surprised if in my lifetime we saw a Kingdom Come animated adaptation. That would be pretty cool.
Another question I have, there are a lot of Bible references and stuff in the book. Did you have to do like a lot of research for that kind of stuff, or is it just like stuff you knew about?
No, I did a lot of research, actually. I am not by nature a spiritual human being. I respect, people's religious beliefs. I myself was a Southern Baptist kid when I was a boy, and I didn't have much of a taste for going to church because it was very fire and brimstone and very angry in the Bible Belt at that age. So I never really stuck with it, but there was a book that I read when I was a kid, and I don't remember the name of it, but it was essentially a modern retelling of the Book of Revelation. And certain things stuck with me, certain phrases of the Book of Revelation stuck with me, and I realized they apply very strongly to the first two pages of the book of what we were doing. And then once I did that, I started digging around, and with Norman McKay being a minister, I started doing a little more biblical research and sort of cherry picking what could and couldn't be used in our work in the Bible. I mean, again, like the names Gog and Magog, obviously, are straight out of the Old Testament. And certain phrases and certain moments of scripture are taken from the Bible. I was fairly liberal with it, but still, I wanted to. If we were going to call the kingdom come, and we're going to make it a minister, and I figure let's go all in.
Mark, sometimes writers will talk about some characters write themselves, and I was wondering if when you wrote this story, did any character end up surprising you where they ended up at the end of the story?
That's a good question. I think Wonder Woman surprised me the most because I've never had much of an affinity for Wonder Woman. I like the character fine. I have nothing against Wonder Woman, but I was always a science kid growing up. I was never a mythology kid, so the Greek and Roman mythos that infused Wonder Woman was never of any real interest to me. So when Alex originally pitched the story to me, there wasn't really a Superman versus Wonder Woman element to it. It was just Wonder Woman was just a supporting character in the story. And in digging around and looking at it, we both of us elevate that character into a major player, and that was surprising to me. And the fact that she's not only survived at the end, but that whole curveball at the end where she's going to have Superman's child, that was something that we never planned for when we did the original series. It was just something that was added on when we were asked to do an epilogue by DC Comics. The idea that Superman Wonder Woman were going to have a baby and Batman was going to help bring it up was never part of the story. It was just something that came up once we were done, as we thought that would be a really cool little epilogue.
Mark, working with the property, I assume there's probably continuity concerns and a lot of editing involved. Is this really the story you felt like you wanted to write, or were there any changes that happened to the script along the way?
Not really. It's pretty much the story that we set out to tell. I think that Alex having such a big influence at DC at that time certainly helped make that difference. I know that if you ask Alex and me both, the one thing that we hated that we were forced to do was give Superman a mullet, because that was what he was wearing in comics at the time. But honestly, no one came down the hall at any point and said, you can't do this with this character, you can't do that with this character. Everybody was, every DC just let us have our heads. Oh, that was just something, it was the one fight that Alex lost, yeah.
Was it your idea or Alex's idea to have the Spectre kind of guide Norman through the whole story?
That was Alex's idea. One of the pages that Alex, one of the images, sketches that Alex came to the table with before we even had a story was a beautiful shot where we first see the Spectre as he drifts into a stained glass window. That was something, that was an image that was in Alex's head from the get-go. And so we knew that had to be a big part of the story. So that was all Alex. And but it was a good choice, and I love writing the Spectre. I mean, he's the spirit of vengeance. What's not to love about that, especially when you've had a lousy day at the DMV or when your girlfriend stood you up for dinner. And, you know, if you don't feel like writing spirit of vengeance then you shouldn't be a writer.
Sure. With a character like Von Bach,
Was there a backstory there? Oh, sorry. Was there a backstory to Von Bock and some of the other characters that you had fleshed out?
Was there a backstory to the...
Yeah, some of the characters that appear, in Kingdom Come that are the lineage from the older superheroes. How it fleshed out was their backstory before you wrote the...
It was pretty well fleshed out, and a lot of that stuff we touched on when we did the Kingdom miniseries. It was sort of an unofficial sequel to it. But one of the things that we have, one of the things that we had fleshed out quite a bit was that Norman McKay, in our earliest draft, Norman McKay had a daughter, had an estranged daughter that he had not connected with for a while, and this was going to help him reconnect with his daughter. I no longer remember what that was all about. I certainly no longer remember why we cut it, but that was part of the fleshing out of Norman McKay that just didn't, it just mercifully made it to the cutting room floor.
Mark, on a more personal note, regardless of Kingdom Come, do you have a personal work of yours that you're most proud of, a story arc or anything you've written?
I'm sorry, again, you kind of muffled out, but are you asking me, other than Kingdom Come, is there something personal that I am fond of?
Yeah, like what stories have you written that you're personally most proud of?
First and foremost, Superman Birthright. That's my favorite thing I ever wrote. And that's my love letter to Superman. And if there's not any copies in the store, you should order some.
we got some.
It's my favorite thing I ever wrote. And beyond that, I'm really fond of what we were able to do with Daredevil recently, over the last few years, when I was actually working out with Somni. And the stuff I'm doing right now on Archie Comics, I'm not trying to sell you on more recent stuff, but I never worked with non-superhero stuff for a long time, and being able to write comedy with heart to it, with the Archie stuff, has been such a revelation that I love doing those books. And so some of that stuff's been some of my favorite things. But I have to say, Superman Birthright, top of the list.
One of my favorite things, I love, the Archie books are really great, but like the your introduction to the old books in the back, like they just have so much information and there's so much fun.
Thank you. I enjoy writing those because it forces me to do my homework too. And look, I'm older than you guys. Even I don't know what 2020 really means, and I have to look these things up, these references to the 1940s.
In a similar vein, what are some things, or is there anything that you haven't worked on that you would like to be able to, especially maybe something non-superhero?
I gotta tell you, it's a short list only because after 32 years, I've been lucky enough to be able to get my hands on pretty much everything. But I think that the ones that are still outstanding are Doc Savage. I'd like to take a turn at Doc Savage. I'd like to take a turn at the Lone Ranger. And I'd like to someday take a shot at a long-run Batman, because I've done a couple of Batman one-shot stories here and there, but I've never really written Batman for any length of time, and that'd be a lot of fun.
I think everybody here could get excited about some ongoing Mark Waid Batman.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, and one vote for Lone Ranger.
And another for Doc Savage.
We just have about 5 more minutes left. If anybody has any final questions for Mark.
Mark, I was wondering, since you had the Alan Scott was Green Lantern, it was never clear who was the Flash. Was that Barry Allen? Was that Wally?
We always thought it was Wally West, but Wally West really overrun by the Speed Force. So there's little elements of Jay and little elements of Barry in there as well. But taking our mind, he was always Wally. Yeah.
Excellent.
I love that answer.
Anybody else? It's not every day we get to talk to Mark Waid.
Anybody else?
Well, it's not so much a question but a comment. I said it earlier, but I know you had hinted at the Spectre, being like a narrative plot device, and I actually thought that was a really good use of his power, and to mix that in with Norm and the Southern Baptist background, that just, I thought, really kind of made it seem more, don't know, it added a level of depth to the story that I think would have been missing otherwise.
Thank you. I think Alex is being brought up in a church and my aversion being brought up in the church, I think fed off each other really well and helped it play off each other really well. So that worked out pretty good.
My comment would be that what's really great about the book is that for a book that deals with these big, deep issues and with the apocalypse and judgment, it's really quite a humane book. And it has a happy ending may sound trivial, but it has an ending where the characters, by realizing humanity and realizing in some ways they're not really gods, they can blow up the world, and it really doesn't mean very much, really is a positive book. And I really kind of thought sometimes comics have gone so dark. It was really... on one hand, a really good serious story, but it was kind of uplifting in its own way. And I was commenting before, the humor in the epilogue is really just a lot of fun. So it's
I don't have it in me to write a cynical story. I don't have it in me to write a dystopic story. I don't begrudge people who tell cynical stories. I have some of the best stories I've ever read are not specifically optimistic or hopeful. But my own personal self, my own personal viewpoint is, especially when it comes to superhero stories, I just feel like ultimately hope and optimism is the order of the day. And I can't write stories that are not optimistic. I can't write stories that are not hopeful. I mean, Jesus, I even wrote Irredeemable, a book about a supervillain, and I still managed to stick the landing at the end with a moment of hope. So if I can do that, I can take it anywhere.
Mark, when I opened up issue one to reread the story for this book club, I saw your signature on the front page when you came to Greensboro.
Yeah.
And now you're allowing us to talk with you again tonight, so I just wanted to say thank you for always supporting the fans and being a part of our experience, not just writing the books, but us being able to talk with you about them.
Oh, my pleasure. Look, again, without you guys, I'm going to have to dig ditches for a living, and no one wants that. I really appreciate the feedback. I really appreciate the questions. I continue to be sort of flabbergasted that 20 years later, people are still talking about this book, but I am grateful for that, and I'm glad I was able to take some time this evening and talk to you guys.
Yeah, Mark, thank you so much. As for everyone here at Acme Comics, we really appreciate everything you do for everybody. And this is really, really a big deal for all of us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right.
This has been a great way to kick off the book club. And it's been fantastic. So I hope we'll have many more of these to come.
All right, yeah. Someday when you put Superman Birthright on the book club, call me back, okay?
Deal.
Irredeemable, incorruptible. That's the ones we're going with.
There you go. All right. Gentlemen, I'm signing off. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you again,
Mark.
Thank you. Yeah, take care.
All right, guys. I think that'll... we'll go ahead and wrap up the inaugural Acme Comics Book Club. Thanks, everybody, for coming.
Yeah, guys, thank you so much. You guys have any comments, questions, concerns, complaints? Like, we want to keep this going. Suggestions?
Yeah, we're going to the next book, I figure, for Halloween, we're going to do.
I want to announce it. I'm really excited about this one.
This is this guy over here.
So to get us in the spirit for Halloween, our next book that we're going to be doing is Nailbiter Volume 1. Yeah. So I know most of you guys, or some of you guys, probably already own Volume 1 of Nailbiter, but we will be getting more copies in this coming week.
Kind of thinking it might be tomorrow because we've direct ordered them, which they should have been here today, but we were trying to hopefully have them tonight, so we were like, hey, here's the next one. But yeah.
Well, keep your eyes peeled on the Facebook page, and we'll definitely update for when it's in. Like I was saying, if you guys have any suggestions on how we can improve on this or anything you guys would like to see us do, please let us know, because we'd love to keep this going for months to come. And, if we can do more stuff like we did with Mark Wade tonight, that would be phenomenal.
Yeah. And just so you guys know, I kind of put a small list together of if you liked Kingdom Come, here's some more suggestions we have. The book Alex Roth worked on before this, Marvels. Same artwork, but it's the Marvel side, Marvel characters, and it's kind of more of a it's in continuity stuff more than actual an Elseworld type story. There's also Justice, which Alex Ross did, which is he did the covers for, which is a kind of like not really a sequel to this.
But well, yeah, it was like Mark said, it was kind of like the unofficial sequel.
Yeah. And then there's Twilight, not the vampires and werewolves, but actual like the DC Twilight, which has to do with the future.
So no twinkling?
No twinkling.
Yeah, okay. No sparkles.
Injustice, Gods Among Us, Crisis of Infinite Earths, and Avengers, Days of Future Past, if you kind of like the look to the future kind of stuff.
Looking at the dates, Alex Ross would have only been like 22 when he started this book.
I know.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah, that's really good for 22 years old.
And before we sign off, I again want to say thank you to Pete, and I think he deserves a huge round of applause for putting this together. He put in a ton of hours into this thing, and like I was saying, I hope it only continues to grow and grow. So thank you, Pete.
Tons of hours for the next one, guys. And it's going to be, let me just make sure I got this right. October 26th is the week before Halloween. That is a Wednesday evening again, and it is October 26th. We'll probably do it again about 8 to 9. See what we can wrangle up for this one.
How do you guys like doing the Wednesday evening thing? Because I know, Dan, you mentioned...
Well, that's
the
same day as my signing, coincidentally, right?
Oh, is
yes,
it? Yeah, yeah.
It is. Okay. Same day.
I think doing it right at close would be great, because then we can buy our comics and just stick around for close.
Yeah,
but otherwise, people have to leave and come back.
Right.
Okay.
I'm sure you guys probably need a break and time to set up, though.
But we just usually need to set stuff up. That's the only thing. I mean, it could take like a half hour or something.
Yes, you guys have restaurants here and stuff. Don't listen to me. I'm lazy.
No. Cool.
Yeah.
That about wraps it up.
Thanks. Nice job.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, guys.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Seriously.
Really impressive.
Well, we can thank Steven for most of that, too.
Thank you.